You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Sounds like some bad movie.
You there?
Body slam. Don't even talk about it. Moving on.
It's like, you know, I'm thinking, should I come in the same exact way? No, I can't.
Yes, you gotta.
I'm fucking annoyed. Yeah, Hal Needham. He should have his own movie. What do you think, Scott?
You're not helping. Come on. We had some technical difficulties. We're starting over again, but we're good because we're here. Joey's here. I'm here, Scott. And we're both going to be reviewing the 1986 film
Body Slam. In all seriousness.
Joey. Yeah. She still can't hear you. What? You're still not coming up.
How? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not the one. She's watching it live and there's no audio for you.
Oh, hold on. But I can see my mic being picked up. My microphone. Oh, it's here. Yeah, testing 1, 2, 3. Audacity's picking up my voice. OBS Studio is saying it's picking up my voice.
She's saying that you're not. She can't hear you. I don't know. Let me turn on. Let me play the stream and see if I can hear you.
Let me go back into sound.
Jesus, I can't even view on YouTube.
There's my microphone. It's in the system. It's the default system, and it's picking up audio.
All right, don't say anything. I can hear you now. I can hear you.
I think the first time, absolutely, I could see that my microphone was not being picked up by OBS Studio, but that was corrected.
Okay.
Can she hear me now?
I don't know. I can hear you now, but we got to start over again. I mean, this is horrible.
I don't think we need to start over. I think the feed, the YouTube feed, and this other, it's fine.
All right. We spent 5 minutes talking about the audio, but.
Listen, it happens. And it wasn't that long.
So Scott and Joey were reviewing the 1986 film Body Slam.
Correct. Directed by Hal Needham. And as I was mentioning before, I really do feel like this guy should get his own film. Hollywood mm-hmm. should absolutely should be doing that. I mean, he died in 2013. Get it done. Get somebody to, you know, there's plenty of people that could play him.
Yeah, yeah, you know? He definitely had a huge career, very influential in the film industry.
Yeah,
the whole genre, really.
Get somebody like, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson mm-hmm. to do it, you know, or who's the other guy I'm thinking of? Shit. Oh,
no idea.
The guy that did He made movie with like The Boxer, that director. He's made mm-hmm. a bunch of movies with Christian Bale. I can't remember his name. But you get him to do it. They should also make a movie about Russ Meyer if we're talking about movies about people that they should do. Like Russ Meyer's career is fascinating as well.
I don't think Hollywood is as proud as of Hal Needham and Russ Meyer as they should be. And I think there might be some reluctance to, at least in the mainstream, to lionize such, not lionize, to elevate such people.
Maybe.
Could be. I don't agree, but that might be what the sentiment is.
I think those types of movies, if done correctly, I mean, I think gets Oscar attention every single time. I think mm-hmm. it just does. It really does. But, you know, back to the topic at hand, Body Slam. Now,
right.
This is a film that I did not know existed. And this is from somebody that grew up watching wrestling my whole life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No,
I was in the wrestling in those in the 80s and 90s for a bit too.
Yeah,
I mean, this was not on my radar. I agree with you.
And I don't watch wrestling anymore because I'm not 12 years old anymore.
You're an adult. Yeah.
Listen, if you're an adult and you watch wrestling, that's your thing. That's fine. Just know that. That's the best way I can put it. But I'm just going to come out and say it. I didn't hate this movie. And it's probably because of my childhood nostalgia for wrestling.
Well, it's one thing it has going for it is the cast. I mean, Dirk Benedict from the A-Team, he's right. basically playing face if he didn't join the military in this film. It's not really a stretch of the character. And he actually filmed this in between filming the A-Team.
Yeah.
You got Tanya Roberts, who is mostly useless in this film.
She was just a pretty face on screen. That's really all she was used for.
Yeah, she disappears for the entire second act, and you don't miss her.
No.
And then you're like, why are we back here again?
Yeah. Then you got Rowdy Roddy Piper. You have mm-hmm. a slew of real wrestlers in this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody from, and cameos by Ric Flair and what's his face? Oh, fuck. Bruno Sammartino, you know, mm-hmm. Guys like that. And then they have like Captain Lou Albano, but he didn't play Lou Albano in this. He played Captain Lou Morano or something like that.
Yeah, that
was probably, that's probably a copyright issue because McMahon, even though those
but
are
the other people, they introduced them by their names, like the Iron Sheik.
And, no, that wasn't the Iron Sheik. That was somebody else. That was like the Iron Sheik of Ayatollah or some shit like that. It wasn't the Iron Sheik.
Okay.
It was more aliases, more fake names, but that wasn't actually the real Iron Sheik.
The other guy was the real Vlassi or whatever his name is, with the cane.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's his real name, not his stage name. So, you know.
That makes sense. And I was wondering why.
He was portraying that character on the screen, you know? So, like, you got it if you're a wrestling fan.
So the WWE probably had, like, copyright on the characters 100%. They were playing.
McMahon really held that shit tight. So it's, you know, it's not Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Quick Rick Roberts.
Quick Rick Roberts. And, I mean, of course, it's Rowdy Roddy Rick Roberts. It's R&R. So, yeah. And he's wearing, like, the traditional, like, yellow that he kind of wore and whatnot. No kilt, but
that's why it was bugging me, because like Albano, they just changed his last name from Albano to Morano, and I was like, I don't get it.
You have a good thing. Point. The Hawaiian shirt with the fucking rubber bands taped to his face.
And if I had my beard, this week I would have put rubber bands in it to commemorate. Yeah, but I stupidly shaved last week. I wasn't thinking.
Quick, Lou Albano, that is the same year he did this. Is the same year he did Wise Guys. And you know how I feel about the movie Wise Guys. I fucking love that movie.
I don't want to give the false impression that this film is funny, but every time Lou Albano's on screen, I was chuckling.
He's comedy gold.
It's just like nonstop. he doesn't stop moving at all.
But
you just can't.
But the thing is, it's like he was doing Wise Guys at the same time, You know, he went from one film to the other. I think he did Wise Guys first because I saw a lot of the character he did in Wise Guys in this, like when he was yelling at people. You know, he's like, listen up, Dick Steen, you know. Thank you, Mr. Acavano.
So you've also got Barry Gordon, Charles Nelson Reilly. He plays the host. Yeah,
he Billy did Barney. That. He did that in one part of the film.
Of course he did. John Astin had like a cameo as well from the Adams Family.
Yeah, it was a car salesman or some shit.
Billy Barty, not the only dwarf in the film, but the only one with a speaking part.
Right.
But he shouted out homophobic slurs way too often.
And the other little person was holding a sign that said, had the F word on it as well.
And slur, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like,
the F dash 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 word, the other one that, you know, we don't use anymore either. For Ryan, good
rhymes
reason.
With maggots.
That's right. I'm like, when I saw it, I was like, holy like, shit, this is a PG movie. The movie's rated PG.
It's the 80s.
And then at one point, someone just verbally called someone that. And I'm like, oh my God.
It was Billy Barty. It was like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, but wasn't there another scene separately without him that somebody called someone that too?
I don't remember.
I just
remember him doing it. He had his slurs had the most impact on me. I was shocked at Billy Barty. Somebody else I want to mention is John Fujioka.
Oh,
he played Mr. Kim.
Yep.
He's in from one of my favorite childhood films, Private Eyes with Tim Conway and Don Knotts.
Oh wow!
And he plays just as a racially insensitive character in that as he does in this.
And in this, he's Korean.
Right.
And then he's called Chinese. He's called Taiwanese. He's called Japanese. The weirdest
running gags is Dirk Benedict keeps calling him Japanese. It's like, it's not funny. It wasn't funny the first time. Why does it have to be a running gag?
And let me ask you this. So, you know, the cover of the episode is the movie poster.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't study it that hard, but there's already 3 mistakes on that cover. Do you know what those are?
I haven't looked that closely, so go for it.
Okay. In the movie, he owes him something like, it's a very specific number because he repeats it, $67,418.72.
Yeah. Something like that.
On the poster, he's holding a sign that says he owes him $150,000. And I'm like
maybe it was a rough draft of the screenplay.
It has to be. That poster must have been a long time ago. The other mistake.
In the defense of the film, though, $67,422.19 is a lot funnier than $150,000.
It is a lot funnier. I will say.
So I can see that changing in a draft of the script.
And I love that he went to court with him and he won the case, and the guy is still trying to come after his money. And every time he does, he destroys another one of his vehicles.
Yep.
So the second mistake is there is one person on the cover destroying his vehicle. It's a white, big, burly, bearded man. And that is not who destroys his vehicle throughout the entire film. It's 2 henchmen, also 2 real wrestlers from the era. The third mistake is, and it's minor one, he doesn't drive that color car ever in the movie. The engine is pulled out. I could even throw that on top. There's never a point where an engine is pulled out, but I'm grasping at straws at that one.
False promises in these movie posters, I tell you. Man. So this film was obviously made to cash in on the popularity of the WWE and wrestling,
which
in
was
the
huge
80s.
At the time. Huge.
It exploded into a phenomenon. And then like pay-per-view was like the big thing that just started, you know, that was the time pay-per-view became a thing.
Right.
And just like hair metal bands and kind of mixed with horror genre in the 90s,
right.
They were trying to do the same thing with this in the 80s with with music and wrestling.
Yeah.
Hence the plot of this movie.
Right.
So
he's a terrible manager because that's his character in the film. He's a manager and he's not good at it. He dresses the part and he's a slick talker, but
it's like a talent agent.
Yeah. And somehow people still hire him and he screws up every time.
Because his face.
Pretty much. So he ends up, quote unquote, accidentally representing Rowdy Roddy Piper because he walks into a meeting and starts negotiating his contract and gets some leverage. And Rowdy Roddy Piper's character is impressed by it. So he wants him to manage him. And he reluctantly says yes, but because he gives him $500 as an upfront retainer. Then he gets his partner to sign him. And then he has a band called Kix.
Kick. That, oh, yeah, that's right. They change it later.
They change it later because, Kiss, The Who, shit like that. Although it doesn't make sense because there's plenty of bands that have S in their name. but whatever. So he's just a terrible manager, agent, whatever you want to call him.
But he's got a good heart.
But he's likable.
He's likable. He has a good heart. The character arc is like he becomes a better manager because he starts taking concern for his clients. He grows very close to Quick Rick Roberts and his niece and the other wrestlers. And
now, did I miss something? Did they ever explain that his niece is she like on like off for the summer?
No, she just
hangs around and is not in school, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, you just needed a kid in there because it's a PG film,
right?
Okay. Yeah, my favorite kid of the film was not her though. It was when in the third act when Lou Albano's running through the crowd and he ignores the kids. They're asking for he just pushes autographs
them out of his way,
and then the one kid gives him the finger, says, "Hey, Albano, Lou, autograph this." I laughed at that. It was crude, but at least it was funny having a kid do that to Lou Albano.
Right.
So that's the first act is him. The film is very lopsided. The whole first act is really just to set him up as a character and his ineptitude and his like sleaziness. But that's really set up in the first 5 minutes of the film. You didn't really need that.
Oh yeah, no, of course.
So not. The first act is really slow, especially the opening credits where there's one joke in the opening credits and it's not funny. Right. And then the rest of it is just him driving. Then the second act is when he gets the brainstorm of, oh, I'll mix the wrestling with the music and we'll go on tour because we can't get in any big arenas. And then that becomes like this extended montage.
Well, that happens. I mean, not to go into detail, but the reason he gets the idea is because he gets cheated out of a 2-night show promise. Like he was supposed to do wrestling and a concert on each night, and the guy said, "Oh no, that's our most popular night. That's like
rodeo the pig show
or pig show or some shit like that." So he said, he said, "Make the best of what you got," yada yada yada, and that's when he gets the idea to put both acts together, which turns out to
be
a huge hit. They end up on the cover of Rolling Stone. Like all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's like coming up.
Right. And then the big finale is when Harry Smilak, I hate when they give him weird names. It's not funny. But when Dirk Benedict's character challenges Lou Albano to a big fight for the title,
which happens on Cannibals. Charles Nelson Reilly's show, which is supposedly watched by millions. It's like, but they have a room of like 50 people, but whatever. Sure. I get it. It doesn't have a large budget.
All right. You have to extend your suspension of disbelief a little bit for 80s films. You can't cling too closely to reality. The film, I feel like there are better, like you could compare this to maybe Digstown where like the wrestling should have been there was very little wrestling in this wrestling film. There's really like two matches and that's it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you do is you have kind of like,
and then the montage,
you have a montage of wrestling. That's what you really kind of get.
Yeah.
But so
But like they could have I feel like the film would have been better if they shortened the first act, because you don't need that much depth, got rid of Tanya Roberts, and then the second act, you could have been on the road with them, like, and have them like having more experiences together, more wrestling matches. We learn more about wrestling. I mean, for if you're trying to draw people into a film with wrestlers, you need to have a decent amount of wrestling. This film doesn't have that amount. I don't know if other wrestling films like No Holds Barred do, because I never watched it. But that came out,
I think, 4 years later. That was actually a pretty big hit. But you know what? The production value was better. The script was better. Dare I say, the acting was better. And it was a summer film.
And the scene transitions are horrendous. Like an action sequence will happen, like they flip the car, or they hop in the elevator. Like he'll end the action sequence, and then like bam, opening shot, next scene, transition. You know, establishing shot. So what the? Give us a second to breathe, Hal. He has his focus on like the punchline. He's like, all right, punchline's done, cut. No, Hal.
No, you're not wrong. Especially like the one scene where the Tanya Roberts' mother's car gets flipped over.
Yeah, that was one of them.
And then it just goes right to the next scene where they're at the house. It's like, it wasn't his fault. They came and just did it. And it's like, wow, that was a hard cut over.
Even the ending, they win.
The ending is terrible.
They win. And he's like, roll the credits. Hell, we can wrap up, do an epilogue. Roll the credits.
Well, here's the thing, too. If we're going to, get nitpicky that way, how about when he, what's-his-face, comes to visit him, is ready to destroy another car, right?
Oh, Mr. Kim, yeah.
Mr. Kim comes over, and he pretends that Lou Albano or Lou Morano's car is his car, and then they just show a sheen of the jaws of life, like cutting a heavy-duty, like, 4-inch pipe or 3-inch pipe in half. And then that's it. Nothing happens after that. You just assume that they destroyed his vehicle, right? Yeah, Hal Needham's like, we can't destroy another vehicle. We've run out of vehicles. It's like, Jesus Christ, Hal. Maybe you shouldn't have destroyed the 3 or 4 earlier and showed them destroying this one. But they didn't. So they cut from that right to the match. And the whole point of the match is on the show. They basically, Smilak goes to Lou Morano, Captain Lou Morano. He's like, listen, we win, we get the belts, you leave wrestling. You win, you keep the belts, we leave wrestling. So, the bet's in place, and it's ready to go. And then you're right. At the end, they win. So, yes, you know that they're out of wrestling and all of that. But there's him finding his car. There's no them crying in the locker room. There's no exposition. There's nothing.
That would have been a great post-credit sequence. Albano coming out to his car.
Like, sure, the credits are rolling, and then they show that part. I mean, Hollywood has gotten better with things like that, because there have been plenty of other instances where they end movies abruptly or the ending isn't satisfying at all. And I think Hollywood knows that a little bit. They've gotten better.
I also like how he handled like the when they had stuntmen for like the scene on the Charles Nelson Reilly's show,
right?
Where when Lou Albano picks up
Billy Barty,
picks up Bill Barty.
He picks up Smilak.
Yeah, and throws him. But like, there's like 2 or 3 times in the film where like something happens to Billy Barty or Dirk Benedict or whatever, and like they do like a shot, and then they cut away. And then they cut back and they show the thing happen. And it's like, it's so blatant that they swapped. Like, it's not a smooth transition. No. It's not a smooth cut. It's not clever. It's just like, oh yeah. Yeah. That's that. They definitely didn't want to push Billy Barty off the stool for real.
No.
Dwarves don't heal well.
No.
Especially little homophobic ones.
Oh my God.
It just took me off guard. And then when it happened again, I was like, this is a thing? just the weirdest running gag.
Wouldn't it be funny if Billy Barty's like, can I make an addition to the script? And Hal's like, sure, go ahead. And then he did that on his own.
even later when Billy Barty clobbers Charles Nelson Reilly with the cane, he does it off screen.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah.
It's like the stunt guy didn't want to deal with stunts. He's like, no, just cut. Just go over. We're not going to. Hooper was enough. I'm not dealing with this shit anymore.
Right. Hooper. That was another big hit for Hal Needham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
huge hit, actually. And didn't they have like the Guinness World Record for like a car jump or boat
the
jump?
Car jump at the end.
No, boat jump. I think wasn't it a boat jump?
Oh no! I think it's the drop when Burt Reynolds' character does the drop into the like the high rise drop. He's on a wire and he drops. Like I think that was like the largest drop, the highest drop ever at that point in time.
Oh God!
It's been broken since then. I think even the Fall Guy broke one of those records when they filmed it.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I can't understand how that film didn't blow up. I was like, what the fuck do you want in the film? Because that film had everything.
Right, it did.
What people need to and by the way, I saw Supergirl. It's and it was fine. It was a nice, fun, entertaining film. Everybody needs to shut the fuck up.
That's everything I keep hearing and reading is Supergirl's like demise at the box office was not warranted at
no.
all.
At all. And everybody shitting on it is just shitting on it because they shit on DC films and they don't give any. That's it.
No, you're 100% right. And
I had to get it off my chest.
No, I haven't seen Supergirl yet, but I already know that I'm going to be defending it till the fucking end of time.
It's not a great film.
No, but it's not any worse than the previous Marvel film that you know made $1 billion.
Oh. I can list 5 Marvel films that suck ass 10 times worse than anything close to what Supergirl's supposed to be bad.
Right. And it made 10 times the money.
Yeah.
Well, so if we really get into that, people who love Marvel will see just about anything that they make and will defend it. And it's like, listen,
I don't know about that.
No, a lot of them will defend it when they know that they shouldn't be because Marvel is everything. Listen, I'll defend DC, but you know I'm not going to defend every movie that they do. Not everything they do is good.
No, obviously not. But Supergirl, I thought was fine, and there was a I had to look it up because I've caught a video online and they showed a clip from Fox News where they're complaining about Supergirl shouldn't be bisexual. I was like, I just saw this film. Where does she fucking say she's bisexual?
It's probably the comic book.
It was the actress was being interviewed and some interviewer just asked her if she, what she thought of her sexual orientation would be. And she said, oh, I think she may swing both ways. And then that was it. I was like, oh, it's woke bullshit. I hate you all.
People. Yeah. Not a fan.
Yeah. But, so Body Slam.
Body Slam. Yeah.
It's low end 80s. It's got that.
Yeah.
Except for the homophobic slurs and the mild violence, it's very family friendly, I would say.
Yeah. And you know what? I have to thank this film because I don't know if Rowdy Piper, hold on. I'm going somewhere with this. I don't know if Rowdy Piper does They Live a year later if he doesn't do this movie.
Good point.
You know what I mean? Because until this, he did not have, a part, like a large enough part where he could quote unquote do some acting, you know? And I think John Carpenter probably through contacts and Hal and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's how you get Rowdy Piper in They Live.
Rowdy Piper is the reason I ever watched wrestling to begin with.
He was my favorite.
I was flipping channels and I came across to this random channel and it had a guy in a kilt talking to a guy in like a Hawaiian outfit on like a interview stage. And all of a sudden Piper just gets up and grabs coconuts and starts smacking this guy in the head with coconuts. Say, you want a coconut? You want a coconut? It's like, whatever this is, I need more of it.
No, Rowdy Piper was fucking hilarious. He was hilarious. He was a good guy. He was a villain. He did everything.
He was a villain and then he became a good guy. I remember the big event where he helped Hulk Hogan out and he became a good guy.
Yeah,
that because, whole story.
Hulk Hogan was always good. And he was the biggest wrestling star. Except
he slept with his daughter.
He slept with his daughter?
I never. That's a rumor. I can't confirm that. I don't
think that. No.
Do some internet research. You'll find a couple of unsavory things about him. He's also racist.
Yeah. Well, no, I do know that there were some unsavory things about him. I thought the biggest controversy was he banged Bubba the Love Sponge's wife, and Bubba had a hidden camera and filmed it, and then the wife released it or some shit like that. I thought that was like kind of like the biggest thing. But
yeah, there was a. Yeah, well, I mean, the rumored thing that I just mentioned, I think that was how they sued TMZ and won. Was it TMZ? Who did they sue for that?
Who knows?
Probably they sued somebody. Anyway.
Fuck TMZ.
Yeah, anyway.
But anyway.
No, BuzzFeed. It was BuzzFeed.
They fucked us too. Do you remember when they fucked us? I'm still bitter about it.
I know.
Listen, if nobody knows what I'm talking about, I'll tell you very quick, 10 seconds. So in Ghostbusters 2, Bill Murray has a guest on, and she says that the world's going to end February 14th, like 2016 or some shit like that. And Bill Murray looks at the camera and goes, Valentine's Day, bummer. So on that day, I already had the meme ready to go, and I uploaded it, you know, like the night before. And we got a lot of attention for it. I mean, like, it was shared. It was like, it's like the only time that I did something like that, that was like, holy shit, this is being shared around. And then BuzzFeed, they basically took my pictures and put new like lettering on it. And they did the exact same thing.
So you're upset with them because they stole your meme.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm over it, though.
That's valid. I'll allow it.
Fuck them. They probably got 100 times the it going viral than we did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So, I mean, also the score to Body Slam sucks, but the fake band wasn't that bad.
The fake band was actually, I mean, not that I would listen to an album if they were released, but they were at least competent and sounded of the time.
Unlike the score, actually, the worst parts of the score ever were the romantic parts when he's hanging out with Tanya Roberts. Yeah, it's just, like, oh, this is painful.
Just canned music. They just, you know, just grabbed free canned music from the studio.
Yeah, the one blurb I saw whenever I was looking up stuff for this, I think it was from Variety, and the quote was a genuinely funny film.
Oh yeah, that's on the cover of the poster.
Yeah, and no.
I mean, listen.
I chuckled at Lou Albano. Dirk Benedict is a likable character. He dresses up in drag in one scene. I thought that was commendable.
Yeah. I mean, listen. It's nearly impossible to get a bad review with the amount of newspapers, at least, well, you know, nowadays, and even then, newspapers, online. I mean, there's always somebody that likes it enough that they can steal, you know, that and just throw it on a cover and whatnot, no matter how bad the movie is. I mean,
I wish this had been a genuinely funny film.
Right. And they could take that little excerpt and make it look like it was positive. Remember we did that for that one movie we were asked to review, The Minority?
Oh, yeah.
We did like a 30 seconds of, you know, I wish this movie was really good, you know, and it's like, and we even told them, we jokingly said, listen, you could take the part where it says this was really good, you know, it's like, go ahead, have at it. They never did, though.
Oh, it's... Speaking of one other film, I just want to mention it real quick, that I've been seeing nothing but bad reviews about, is the new Eli Roth
Ice
film.
Ice Cream Man.
Man, no one likes this film. Every single one's the same, too. They're like, here's the positives. It's gory. All right, here's the negatives, everything else.
Man.
Wow. Ooh. I wasn't even interested in seeing it. Now I'm definitely not interested.
I'll probably watch it.
And every other review says the same thing. It's Eli Roth decided to rip off Terrifier and Weapons.
Oh, okay.
And that's really it.
No.
And that's it.
Good. Speaking of Weapons, did you see the latest trailer for Resident Evil?
Yes, I did. Very interesting.
Zach Kreger. He's my new guy, man. He's doing stuff that I look forward to watching at this point.
I've got no problem with him doing the film, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. However, isn't this like the third reboot?
Yeah.
Of the franchise? Didn't they have one just like 2 years ago? Raccoon City?
No, that was just another. Oh no, you're right. Yes, they had Raccoon City. So this is the third time. But third time's a charm.
There's other video games.
The Mila Jovovich series. Bad as it was, made enough money and people have enough interest. And the games are super fucking popular.
I still haven't watched any of them past two because the audio commentary on two pissed me off so badly.
I've actually only ever seen the first movie.
Yeah, good. That's a good strategy.
And I liked the first movie.
Yeah, me too. I saw it in the theater, and that was back when there was a drought of horror films. And it was like just cool that they did a zombie film. They did a pretty good job too.
At Raccoon City, Umbrella Corporation. I mean, like they did it all. It was in that movie.
Yeah, you younger folks listening, zombies weren't always a thing. They used to be underground. This hasn't always been. There hasn't always been money in zombies.
Yeah. I mean, you could kind of blame The Walking Dead.
This is
a
recent phenomenon.
You can kind of blame The Walking Dead for making zombies super popular again. But making them popular. Because before that, it was kind of like,
100%.
Kind of like a niche kind of thing.
100%. That and the Dawn of the Dead reboot. Because it was so good. I think those are the two reasons. Dawn of the Dead
reboot is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fucking good.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
We're trailing.
Body Slam.
Body Slam. Yeah.
So what are we rating this puppy?
Five.
Yeah. I already beat you to it. I knew we were going to say five for this.
It's not worse than a five, because the kid in me liked it, but it's impossible. It's impossible to be a six if you go six, you're borderline, good movie. You know what I mean?
There's one part I laughed at, and then I had to examine myself. So, why did I laugh at that? It's so minor. Is when he meets the cannibals in the gym.
Oh, right.
And the one cannibal kept twitching his head to swing his ponytail around. And when they're talking to
Smilak.
Smilak, I was forget. When they're talking to Smilak, if the shots from behind, like it goes back, back and forth, so it's from behind them and from behind him. Like the one cannibal twitches his head like that while they're talking to him, and Benedict just gives him like a double take, like very subtle double take.
Like he didn't he didn't know it was coming.
Like he's like, what the fuck is that? That subtle look, and I thought was hilarious. That's 100% Dirk Benedict just being a charismatic guy.
Well, I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Hal Needham did not tell Dirk Benedict that that's how the scene was going to go.
it seemed like a genuine reaction from me too, him. Yeah. So. No, Tanya Roberts, you could just rip Tanya Roberts' character right out of this film, and it has no bearing whatsoever.
If she has 10 minutes of screen time, I'd be shocked.
Yeah. This before or after Sheena?
This is after Sheena. 2 years after Sheena.
Oh, man. I guess that didn't.
This is swing after Sheena, doors. And this is after Live and Let Die. She did that in 85. She was a Bond girl in that with Christopher Walken, I believe. Yeah.
That's View to a Kill.
View to a Kill. View to a Kill. Not Live and Let Die. View to a Kill. Yeah. Oh, no. Duh. The song is Live and Let Die. Whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. She had done Sheena. She was a Bond girl, then ended up in this. And to be honest, the reason why she's probably not in this so much is because she didn't have time. She was probably doing so many other fucking things, because at that point in time, she was, you know, she was very popular.
Oh, I do want to point out one thing I read about this that makes a lot of sense is that the writers slash producers of the film, who were also attorneys, sued Hal Needham for making changes to the script, so they couldn't release it theatrically.
Oh, why would he do
so,
that?
He and Benedict were supposedly rewriting the script like on the fly, like during filming.
Okay. Maybe that's why the cuts are so erratic. That's why the ending is so bad.
It's definitely not a cohesive film. I will say that.
And Hal Needham, didn't he? He worked on the A-Team, right? Did a bunch of stunts for that.
That I'm not sure about. I don't have that knowledge. No. But it makes sense.
I thought he did.
It sounds, it sounds real.
Well, yeah, it sounds real good, right? Sounds like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to say
you know what? I'm going to go with it, too. I'm not even going to look it up. Hal Needham did stunts for the A-Team. That's how he knew Dirk Benedict, and that's how he got him to be in this fucking movie.
All right. Yeah, so 5 stars. It's worth a look if you're if you're a fan of 80s goofiness, then it's definitely worth a look. Or if you're a wrestling fan.
Definitely. If you like both of those things, listen, you're going to enjoy the film. You know you're not watching something good. But you know you're not watching something really bad either.
It's not painful.
No, it's fine. It's a 90-minute movie. It doesn't take you for a long ride. None of the scenes are really super drawn out. It's good.
Yeah, and I mean and like most of the actors are wrestlers, so you're not even expecting good acting. So it's just like you know, you can chill and just enjoy the film for what it is. Except for Billy Barty's part, that's very creepy.
You ready to spin the wheel? Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, yeah. I want to see if No Holds Barred shows up.
Oh God, No Holds Barred, of course.
I'm pretty sure that's on the list on the wheel.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's go ahead and do this. Let's see what kind of shitty music we get this time. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to veto this.
Uh-oh.
And I'll just see if you do. Super Fuzz.
Oh, we're so doing Super Fuzz.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite films from my childhood. Super Fuzz.
Oh, me too. Don't say another word. We're not saying another word until we come back and review Super Fuzz.
I think I probably enjoyed Beans as much as I did because of this fucking movie. just the way he eats in all of his movies. Mm-hmm. Always made me want to eat what he ate.
How about chewing gum?
Oh, chewing gum.
Yeah.
Ernest Borgnine.
All right, no more.
No.
We're not spinning again.
I might go watch Super Fuzz as soon as we're done with this.
Yeah, ditto. This is the second time we've got it on the first spin.
I know. I don't even want to do another one. I'm good with Super Fuzz.
Nope. Super Fuzz. We're doing Super Fuzz.
Wow. That hasn't happened. I don't think that's ever happened. I mean,
well, Body Slam was the first spin, but we spun it two more times,
but I know we were talking about spinning two more times, no matter what, but no, this is the one.
No, this is the one.
This is it. Until we change the rules. I mean, like before we changed the rules, we would spin once and that's what we reviewed. And then we're like, this sucks. I don't want to do this. I don't want to review everything that's on this fucking
There's no point in rolling two more times or spinning two more times because we're going to pick this.
We nailed it.
Yeah.
We nailed it.
Nothing's going to trump this choice right now. This is what we're reviewing next week.
No. I don't believe that if we spun again, it's like, no, it's not better. It's not better. All right.
Get to add another film to it. Is that a 70s or 80s? That's 70s,
that's
80s. Right?
No, that's 80s.
That's 80s? Wow.
I want to say that's like 82, early 80s. 83 or something like that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you've never heard of the film Super Fuzz, look it up. Also, Super Troopers, another alternate version name, Terrence Hill.
Look it up. Which is not his real name. I can't even remember his real name, but it's very Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's a stage name because his name has so many letters and so many vowels that if he wanted to do just Italian films, he would have kept that name. But, you know, Terrence Hill, boom, it's snappy, it's quick, you know, get you where you need to go. And he made a lot of films in his career, some Italian.
I've been catching up on the old ones. I've been watching the old Westerns.
Oh, I love the old fucking Westerns. And you know what? He eats in all of those, too. There's that one Western.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck's the name of it? Where he goes in and the guy gives him a big bowl of food. And he eats everything and then takes the bread and just cleans it up. And just, it's dries. It's like it's done.
It's one of the Trinity films. I forget one. But it's.
You're right. Fuck, man. I'm going to go on a Terrence Hill binge.
I've got a bunch on my Plex, so, you know, have that.
You know what? I don't think I have many or any. I think I just have Super Fuzz. I need to go grab all of them.
I think I have everything that's available that's a decent copy I have. I actually downloaded a few old ones, like from the 70s, whatever, but the quality was atrocious.
Oh, really? All right.
But awful. Yeah, so some of them aren't even worth trying to watch. Right. I have all the ones that are good quality.
I'll grab his filmography and grab what's good, too. Just because I love Terrence Hill, and I love those movies that he was in. Just I do. All right.
Sewn into the bellies of the fish.
All right, everybody. As always, thank you again for joining us for yet another episode of Movies Fantastic, episode 483, where we just reviewed Body Slam from 1986. You can go to our website at moviesfantastic.com. You can download the shows, listen to the shows. You can click on the YouTube link and watch the video that we just made and that you got to hang out with us for. We appreciate that, as always. You can go to iTunes and you can download the show, you can listen to the show through that as well. You go to Facebook.com/MovieSucktastic and you can see everything we're posting there. You can leave us email at themovieguys@MovieSucktastic.com. You can leave us voicemail, it's 908-514-4470. If you want to download our podcast player, it's moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk, or you can just download your favorite podcast player and do a search for MovieSucktastic. Everything comes straight up. Every episode is there. Every episode is free. And you can also check Scott's Letterboxd site at letterboxd.com/moviesucktastic, and you can see everything that he's doing there as well for the show. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
He's a super trooper, really super trooper. A super cop, the kind of you never saw.
You gotta say that, man.
I'm
music fade out. Music fade out.
Okay. Goodbye.